Hey everyone, Bill Kenny here from Focus Lab, a global B2B brand agency. I'm coming at you with another episode of The Debrief. As a reminder, The Debrief series is all about me sitting down with past Focus Lab clients and having candid conversations about their rebrand experience, sharing with you their greatest takeaways and tips about what it's like to go through a rebrand from the client side. So today I sat down with Jonathan Becker. He's the CEO of Thrive Digital. And we talk about a bunch of great things to consider when going through a rebrand. A couple highlights are what it's like to have founder bias as you're going through a rebrand, how to gather feedback and bring people into the loop internally in your company when going through a rebrand. Think smaller instead of larger. What it's like to go through a rebrand in really challenging economic times for Thrive and for Jonathan. That was in the heat of COVID, right in 2020. We were doing this project with them. And ultimately, his greatest tip at the end, which is about patience. So another great episode. I hope you enjoy. Jonathan, time to reconnect. It's been a while. It's been years, actually. So I'm really excited to reconnect. We partnered in the past, and we're certainly going to talk about that. But let me lead out with a couple fun facts. So January 10th, 2020, what a kind of like iconic, unfortunately, iconic date. That's actually the day your project began with us, right before the COVID total explosion. So over 1,000 days ago, your project was created in Basecamp, and your team and my team started to work together on the Thrive rebrand. But before we get into the specifics, can you take a minute, introduce yourself, and tell us what you're building at Thrive?
Yeah, thanks. That was one of the most, it was one of the most tumultuous projects in terms of the landscape over which it was completed, by the way. So it'll be like a fun discussion to unpack some of that. But yeah, taking a step back, I'm Jonathan Becker. I am the founder and former CEO of Thrive Digital. I'm the president of Thrive these days. Thrive is a performance marketing agency. We work with hundreds of different organizations, and we manage about $500 million a year in ad spend for companies like Uber, Asana, Lululemon, and a number of others. Maybe we'll talk about them. Pretty big team, you know. I think as far as marketing agencies go, we're about 130 people. Most of the projects that we work on originate out of the US. And then outside of that, I'm also kind of an investor and run occasional ventures where I do some early stage and later stage investments. And I think just, you know, high level, I started Thrive because I really wanted to prove that marketing campaigns that could be measured and attributed to the spend that underlaid the campaign were better. And so I've spent the last 10 plus years kind of proving that.
We were just talking about that a minute ago. I'm going to be talking with you more about that off camera. Okay, awesome. Thank you for that intro. So yeah, let's dive into this crazy time period where you decide, hey, I think we need to rebrand ourselves. I think something is either broken or could be better. And you did it right before COVID. So how, I guess the leading question is, how did you know it was time to rebrand? What was actually, in fact, broken or not working?
Yeah, so I would say, like, historically with us, we were very scrappy as a business. So, you know, to the extent, like, why did we need to rebrand? It's kind of a case of the cobbler had no shoes. So we were so busy executing, you know, on the work that we were doing that we rarely had any time to be strategic around our own set of needs. And that worked really well to a point. You know, most of our projects have been luckily by referral. So people would kind of hear about us or hear about the work that we did or get written up somewhere and they'd come to us. But at a certain point, we were kind of like, you know, we need to build the business instead of just focusing on working within the business. And part of the foundation of that was having like a brand that we felt was a little bit more scalable and properly defined what we did and who we were. So we actually went through like a mini RFP. I don't even know if you're aware of that, but we had different stages that we went through. We dragged your sales team through it and ultimately, you know, heard great things about Focus Lab and decided to pull the trigger with you folks.
Yeah, I don't remember that it was an RFP process. And you're right to kind of allude to maybe we don't do a lot of that type of process, but when it's right, we of course do. So I'm happy it worked out. So what year was the business at when this project started? How many years in?
We were like 10 years into the business. So I think
pretty far.
12 or 13. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you know, we had a brand, if you can call it that. It was really just a wordmark, and it was kind of like an accidental font, essentially, that someone picked who had built a previous iteration of our website. Everything was black, you know, and the website itself back then was somewhat fragmented in terms of like where the brand leaned in and where we had just like spun out a case study, and it didn't look like the rest of the, you know, the way that the website looked or the company was supposed to look. So I think, you know, we got to the point where we're working with like Fortune 100s, Fortune 500s. We're getting, you know, crazy referrals into people's family offices. And we just had to look the part a little bit better. Not that we couldn't do the work, but us, you know, growing up as a business, making the business itself, making tens of millions of dollars, you know, it was important to have the right clothing, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. And I think that is often the case. A lot of our partners are going through that same type of kind of ordeal, which is we can serve great steak, but people are not going to walk through the door expecting great steak if we continue to look like this from the street. We need some curb appeal. You know, you build that into your mission and your purpose and you bake it all together and it becomes more than just curb appeal. But okay, great. So in this RFP process, which I don't recall, and I wasn't on the sales team, so I guess you were working with, was it Will back then?
Yeah.
Will, remember?
Yeah.
So Will's a partner. He led the growth team for a long time. He actually just passed his CGO hat to Janina, which is awesome. So what were you looking for specifically in a partner during that process?
Yeah, it's a good question. So it wasn't like one of these crazy multi-step, you know, RFPs. It was really a set of criteria that we had determined that we needed to get as many of under our belt if we were going to move forward with a partner. So find a partner that, just to answer your question, had experience within technology, where branding was like a core focus and not just like something that they did. Had a couple references that we could talk to, simple things like that. Obviously, even things like pricing needed to be in the right range. We knew that in addition to the brand itself, that there were a multitude of areas outside of just branding where the brand would live. So everything from our clothing that we produce from employees to events that we run to the website to, you know, our different types of proposals and stuff. So it was important for us to understand, to find a partner that understood how each of those mediums would translate the brand and present it in a way where there was kind of this holistic and non-fragmented brand voice.
Yeah, great. Specialization, one of those words in there, finding a shop that brand is their core focus. It's what we try to hang our hat on, right? Over the years, now for us, 13 years in, we've continued to chop and remove things and only be left with brand for tech. Yeah. Right.
And, you know, I think you didn't ask me this and it wasn't like a criteria of the RFP, but when we found you folks, it was pretty obvious that there was a bit of swagger. Like, you're in Savannah, Georgia, of all places. Right. And like, same thing with
us. Fully remote now, but yes, we were headquartered there.
Your team was there, and we are in, you know, Vancouver, Canada, yet all the projects that we work on are American. And kind of originate out of the like huge markets in the US, like Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York. And so we were always really proud of that. Like, how the hell did we end up, you know, getting these world-class projects in kind of like this geographic, like, backwater of Vancouver? Vancouver is not a backwater. It's a wonderful city, amazing, you know, to live here. And there's great businesses that come out of here. But geographically, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere as it relates to North America. And so we found you folks, and it was obvious that there was like this like confidence and swagger, and we self-identified with that to a certain degree. And so we were like, let's do this.
I love hearing that. You're 100% correct. So at that point, about half of our team was in the Savannah office, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's like we're in the same position as you were and are, which is like people wouldn't guess that a company of, our size at that point, which is only about 10 or 12 more now since then, could be located in Savannah and have that type of impact, West Coast, all your Bay Area, all your San Francisco, all these big kind of tech companies. Like, how the hell do they find this little tiny shop in Savannah, Georgia?
Yeah,
cool. When you start a company in the early years, that's a fear-based thing. Oh, God, we're here. Can we actually compete over there? And the answer is yes. Take a little bit more time, maybe a little bit more effort. But once that's sticky, the snowball starts rolling. So that's cool.
Yeah, it was the same stuff. Like people would be like, wait a minute, like you're based in Vancouver and you can't come and work in our office, or will you work in our office? And so this whole concept, this is like, you know, 12, 13 years ago, I was a freelancer at first. And even just the concept of remote work was very foreign to, I would say, the majority of people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's these things are kind of funny, but they end up being your weaknesses turn into strengths if you figure out how to play it properly.
Especially when they align with the right people, right? Yeah. Other people will see that as a strength, and then you know you have the right partner as well at that point.
100%. Yeah, you need people to take to give you a shot, to take chances on you, and all great people kind of need like that type of benefactor at the early stages. Like you need some people mm-hmm. to believe in you and buy into what you're doing. Every time, I'm sure it's the same with you guys, but like every single time someone hires us, I'm like, yes, like a reaffirmation that we are the best at what we do. You know what I mean? And so, so it's a bit of a like self-fulfilling, like flywheel of confidence, but, it's part of it for sure.
Great. Awesome. Thanks for sharing that insight that we didn't know. You pick us, we start the project. The world is still normal. The old world that we all used to live in. Very quickly, COVID hits. So let's kind of sit on that for a moment. So
there are a couple things here that happened. So, we were fully set up to go remote. So from our own fulfillment operations point of view, we kind of didn't miss a beat, although there was a tremendous amount of uncertainty. With that said, I think we closed our offices in like just after starting the project. Like I remember sitting in our offices physically and having meetings with like your designers and Will and, you know, a number of other people. Everything goes bonkers and it's all you can hear about on the news and people are terrified. There's like people running around crying in the streets and like people are starting mm-hmm. to shut down and stay at home. It's happening in like city after city after city. And then like one of the first days where we're just like trying to figure out like which way up is, I remember getting an email from your team being like, so are we still on for the meeting later today? And I was just like, what the, like, how on earth can you like you guys were still just like plugging away, which was cool. And so actually, believe it or not, working on the brand during that time was this incredible, like, grounding force in a lot of chaos that was happening.
Yes.
And, you know, the brand process really forces you to take a sober second look at yourself and what you do and all of this. And so it was this very strange, like, introspective journey to go on. That's fun and not fun, by the way, at the same time. Throughout what was like total chaos and pandemonium, you know, outside where like the government's kind of like, should we subsidize like everybody and should we suspend the rents of restaurants? And like, by the way, are we going to send checks to all of people? And like, it was really hardcore. So
yeah,
my first experience or the initial part of the experience working with you.
Was there ever a, maybe we should pull the plug on this, reserve cash and not do this? There's just too much to consider right now. Or were you always full steam ahead?
Right. So, no, I think we were always full steam ahead. So first of all, this wasn't like a skrillion dollar project for us, you know,
right.
Tens of millions of dollars a year in revenue. So it wasn't like a crazy financial, like burden on the P&L of the company or anything like that. So, but what I will say is, as an organization, we've chosen to not be too reactionary to most circumstances. You know, we're trying to put one foot in front of the other as a business, understanding that we work in a world that's full of turmoil. And so, you know, the business decision was essentially kind of like, we're going to take the wait and see approach. We're not going to change anything too fast. So in other words, like the needs that gave rise to our desire to or our decision to brand hadn't changed, right? Mm-hmm. We still were going to presume that there was going to be a business there and that all of humanity wasn't going to like start, you know, living in the streets, like killing deer with sticks and stuff like that to survive. So if that had happened, then it would have been a whole other thing. And yeah, I probably would have bounced a check or two for you or something like that. But realistically, we were like, okay, you know, calmness, one step in front of the other. We're going to take the wait and see approach, and we're going to make decisions based on the changing circumstances around us. And it was, you know, Thrive at that point, lost a meaningful chunk of our clients in like the 10 days after most cities in the US started, you know, shutting down, where, you know, cities in California are basically saying like shelter in place, and, you know, New York is like, don't leave your apartment type thing. And so we worked with a lot of people who just freaked out and like cut budgets on projects that were actually doing really well. Like, I've never seen anything like that in my life. They were panicking. So, you know, the microcosm of this, I guess, is the beginning. We see everybody around us panicking, and our strategy is like not to panic. And then the end of it is that, the few clients that we had left ended up being like Uber and Uber Eats and Square and Asana and Tempur-Pedic. And so like all of these companies benefited massively from the pandemic conditions. And so, you know, we're focusing on their needs. We can barely keep up with their growth. Like, we didn't let anybody go during this period, but like, we see ad spends and demand surge for products and stuff. And so we're, you know, hiring as much as we can, doing the best we can. And all throughout this, we're undertaking this rebrand. And then, you know, the end of that process, it's still, you know, deep pandemic, deep lockdown. And we, you know, launched this new brand, and people were like, when did you have time to work on this? Clients, you know, complimented us and were like, when did you have time to do this? And like, but nice brand, by the way, type thing. So, so in that context, it was like this interesting journey for sure. And it was very tumultuous, you know, as it was for every business and every family, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for sharing all of that insider perspective from your side. So speaking about the challenge of it, then let's remove ourselves for the moment of COVID being a challenge and just thinking about the challenges of a rebrand. Yeah. So what for you personally was the most challenging part of going through the process?
So, you know, when you sit down to a meal with friends, like let's say you go to a restaurant that's known for a particular dish, like it's a, you know, barbecue chicken place or steak place or whatever, you all order the same thing and you go with like a table of 10 people. How many different opinions are there?
Yes.
So the inherent issue here is when you're over 100 people, you know, at least at that point we were, now we're like 130 or something like that. You're over 100 people. There's a lot of different stakeholders. And what I learned, you know, at building a company, leading a company partially was like, I can't just like make decisions and will them onto the people. Like I, you know, I have to cultivate buy-in. So if you make choices and you just announce them, you're going to have like a group of people that love what you did, a group of people that aren't sure, and a group of people that are angry about it. And so we undertake this process with like a lens, looking something around like, you know, who should we include in this process? Like not too many, but not too few. And anyway, once we assemble that group of people, it was hard to have consensus on like what the strategy behind our brand was type thing. We all knew like who we were and what we did, but, we're performance marketers, right? And branding and design, these days we have a creative group that does some really interesting work, but it wasn't like my background originally. And it wasn't Brent, the co-founder's, you know, background. And it wasn't, a number of our background, Ross, our managing director. And so we just had different opinions on the same thing. And, you know, there's also kind of like a founder bias where like you build something, you invent something that no one's done before. And you're like, I know what I'm doing. I know better than all these people, you know, on how to do this. And the way that I think is like the way it should be. But as you grow your company, you slowly realize that that's like a bias you hold and it's not true. It might be true at one stage, but it's not as the company changes and grows. I can no longer do certain roles, you know, people's jobs in the company better than they can. Like they're more specialized than me. And so, you know, we're a situation where it was a founder, you know, led group that essentially hired you guys, and we had some inherent biases to get over. And, you know, there were some pretty hardcore conversations internally around that specific topic and just agreeing. But I do have to say, Focus Lab was kind of our like Sherpa through this process. And so you asked the tough questions and you had a good process that made it a lot easier to go through that. But we probably were guilty a little bit of being like a slow client at times and, you know, making you retrade work occasionally.
It's the Sherpa is exactly how we want to be perceived and experienced. That is, that's a spot on. Like, we want to be a shepherd and help people through the journey. We're never going to lie. It's not easy. And then, like you said earlier in the episode, it's not always fun either. So what is most important then? It is the experience of the journey. Ultimately, we're going to get to an end. And we're going to get to an end that's successful together. But there's going to be a lot of unknowns along the way, little pivots this way, pushback from this, pushback from that, in both directions. And it is the ability to shepherd that becomes kind of like the make it or break it. If you can't do that as an agency, from my perspective and opinion, man, I can't imagine what that journey would be like. It would be terrible. Yeah.
You know, that expression, the two best days of a boat owner's life, the day they buy the boat and the day that they sell it.
I did not know that expression.
To me, that was kind of like this project in a nice way, right? But for me, I was really stoked when we brought you guys on board, and I was really stoked when it was finally just done.
Yes, you're like, we're there. Whew. Yeah, that's the realities of the project. That is literally why we record these episodes with people like yourself that have gone through it with us. It's important for them to know what it's really like. So thank you for sharing that. So on the flip side, well, you might have just answered it, actually. What was the most rewarding aspect of the project?
Well, it was the end product, obviously, right? So I think, like, you know, you go through a process like this, part of it is psychology, right? Like, you're literally asking us, you know, questions around our identity. And so it was nice to go through that as a company. You do that all day long as an individual. Who am I? What am I doing here? Why am I doing this? Those types of questions, right? But as a company, it's easy to let that stuff slide. So I think it was very rewarding to realize maybe a little bit more around like the mission of the company and unpack that a bit. And that in itself is still like a debatable, you know, point for a lot of companies, I think, but it was nice to like pay attention to it. And then the final outcome, we were really just excited about it. We were excited to like launch and kind of, have this new identity, basically have a new identity like for the brand.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's that brand therapy that happens. That, who are you and what do you stand for? Well, we already know the answer to that, but let's slow down and talk about it anyways. Yeah. And you get past it, you're like, oh, I'm happy we talked about that. That was clarifying, if not anything else.
Totally.
So I actually kind of just remembered this. We talked about going through this, not only in a pandemic, just the journey itself being challenging, but you also had a child in the middle of the project. Is that right?
I did.
That was a busy year.
So managing a company during the pandemic, but then also having a kid during lockdown amidst all of this. And so actually, it kind of took me on a bit of a side journey where I took some paternity time off, probably like 2/3 of the way through the rebrand. Mm-hmm. And then like popped my head up at the very end and actually disagreed with some of the decisions that had been made. I don't know if you remember this.
Like, we had to I'm asking. It's literally why I'm asking.
So the irony here is like, we deal with all kinds of, you know, clients and sometimes they do this stuff like what I did. And it is very challenging from a project management scope and execution point of view. And so what I learned is how people feel when they're going through something like that, where they feel the need to like strong arm the project, you know, into a certain direction. And I think that we had like arrived at everything from like fonts to a color system to the logo. And it was actually the logo and identity, you know, that particular aspect of the mark that I was just kind of like, it just doesn't feel like Thrive to me. And so And I was lucky because a couple people took a step back, including some of your designers, and were like, if the founder doesn't feel like this is the right vibe for the company, then like, let's take a second look at it. And so I would say that while I am aware of the disruption that my, you know, input caused late in the game, you guys handled it graciously. It was cool. Mm-hmm. The result was patience and the willingness to listen on behalf of your team, and especially the designers we were working with. They had to take some critical feedback from me late stage. By the way, critical feedback doesn't mean we weren't happy. It just means that I needed, like, in this case, what I was asking for was a couple new alternatives to what had been decided that maybe incorporated some of the elements that people liked. You know, and it drew out the process a little bit, I think. And so on one level, your designers had to like take some critical feedback midway through the process, which they might not have been expecting. And they did that graciously. On the other hand, the company, you know, Focus Lab has to decide like, hey, like this is going to increase the time of the project and the scope of the project. Ultimately, you know, my team too was like, yeah, this is that we're glad we did this. It like kind of went in the right direction. So it, you know, having a kid in the middle of the pandemic, like took me away from the project, and that, you know, having a baby, April, 2020, I could have probably talk about that, you know, for the entire rest of the hour, if you want. But whoever's listening, I'm sure like doesn't want to hear about that.
They're like, oh, please don't, please.
The effect that it had, you know, in terms of, all of that is that it was kind of in one way, like a welcome distraction. And then also like, you know, obviously, difficult to manage in the context of a business and a whole bunch of underlying things that we were working on, including this project with you.
Yeah, I remember. So I'm not in the deliverable shipping the work, but our team is small enough, even now, 33. I still see the 99% of the most of the things that go out. They don't need my sign off.
Yeah.
But as a past designer, I can't help look at most of it, at least all of the visual deliverables. And really, as a customer focused human, I want to see the responses, right? To any deliverable, right? How are our clients feeling? What is the experience like for them? I love still to this day, I go to the site and the visual identity, the visual language, the patterns, the texture. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
JT definitely nailed that.
The other thing is like, we don't look like other companies that what we do. That was actually intentional. We wanted to stand out a little bit. So I would say that, I remember kind of visually analyzing competitors, and they were all kind of clustered together like here and here and here. And then what JT proposed was like, you know, off in, sorry, I'm trying to get it somewhere on the camera, but like over here.
It was so far off, it can't even fit.
Yeah, it was pretty far away. Like we picked like a very odd color palette in retrospect, but it works. It's totally cool. And so, yeah, no regrets about any of that.
Great. Great. Okay. So post project now, like we said at the beginning of the episode, what is that? Almost 3 years, Yeah. We're into the third year now. So I'm interested to hear from you. And it seems like you're not as boots on the ground. Congrats for that, business owner to business owner. I know that, is kind of like a milestone that we all go through, but what has the new brand allowed you to do that you couldn't do before?
I think honestly, so as a business, we were kind of already like walking into and standing up, you know, in all of these interesting rooms as it relates to our ability to, you know, land and execute really enterprise level client work and also the more scrappy type of work. What I would say is that it's given us the ability to have a lot of confidence that when we do show up, whether it's in a live event, someone's office, on the web, mobile, whatever it is, that we have a unified identity that's pretty recognizable, I think, if you know who we are. So, and we honestly just didn't have that before. It was super fragmented. It was kind of all over the place. So that's the biggest advantage, I would say. And it's part of running a more mature business. You know, like I don't think that we would have been able to continue on the way that we were like, handling, you know, brand as a platform for the company or part of a platform for the company. And so that was something where I honestly feel like it was a box that we checked. Now it's not, it doesn't mean that the brand doesn't continue to evolve and that brand iteration isn't a thing or that we don't do X, Y, and Z, but we took a big step forward with that in partnership with you. And so just actually quite grateful that we were able to get there.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. We're grateful to have worked with you. This is not the end, but I'll just share the appreciation, because for us, all we really care about is just helping our clients succeed in whatever form that is. Does it equate to, oh, we can make quadruple the revenue now, or like we're able to do that? It's like, as long as we helped create progress through the lens of brand for you, then we've done our job. And I've heard very similar answers over the past kind of couple episodes, even more specifically, which is it's just allowed us to feel more confident in the room from a perception perspective. We are perceived different now, and that allows us to now reach the height that we can already deliver at. But before, it felt like we were punching above our weight class or kind of cheating a little bit, where we weren't, but that's how we were being perceived.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, look, I have a ton of confidence in our own company's, you know, ability to handle the work that it's given. And I never really felt that we were punching outside of our weight class, maybe a little bit at the beginning, but I think that it was more just that once we got into the ring, it was like we were wearing the wrong clothes. So people would be like, wait a minute, like, who is this guy? Like, you know what I mean?
You're supposed to be here?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there was another like example of this for us, just to like really exemplify it. The first couple years of running Thrive, literally for the first 2 years, were like a really badass, you know, small digital marketing boutique that had no website for itself. And it was, again, because we're too busy to do anything about it. So again, case of cobbler has no shoes, right? Mm-hmm. We were really good at what we did. Once the word got out kind of thing about us, we were in very, very high demand, couldn't hire fast enough, delays with projects starting sometimes just because, you know, there's only so much bandwidth. We have to train new people, all of the things. But we also just didn't have a website, which in a funny way, I think was like alluring to some people. Like it was this strange curiosity, like who are these guys? Like, how can they get away with this? But we did. And then the other part of it, you know, there would be people that were just like, well, this is strange. Like you got to practice what you preach. Right. And so I would also say that, like, you know, my mission originally was to prove that like digital marketing had the capability to be measured and that measurement, you know, would enhance the performance of campaigns. Over time, one big component of those campaigns has become the creative. And so these days we have a creative department. We probably did when we worked with you as well, but it's bigger now and we do a lot more stuff. How could you have a creative department? It's the same thing, right? But how could you have a creative department that doesn't stand behind or on the platform of a cool brand, right? Like, why would anybody hire you if you can't even do justice to your own brand, basically? Mm, yes. And so that was part of it. I guess it's like this leveling out, you know, legitimizing set of characteristics that like a big agency should conform to in a certain degree. And like, I've never really been a conformist, hence like all of these like ragtag like elements to the growth of the agency. But at the same time, like, yeah, at a certain point, just have a proper brand.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it works and it's valuable. Yes. All right. I'm only going to hit you with one more question. If you're sitting down at that dinner that you talked about with only one person this time, and they were like, hey, we're going to go through a rebrand, can you impart wisdom? What would be the one thing most important that you would tell them to consider when they go through a rebrand?
I think they're going to have to like expect to be very patient with the process. So it's a multi-stage, multifaceted process that is very introspective in nature. And so if they don't realize that that's what it is, like figure that out pretty quickly, because for us, it felt like a bit of a, and this is not a reflection of any creative partner we've ever worked with or anything like that. It was a bit of a roller coaster because we're aligning around a whole bunch of things that were somewhat loosely defined internally. If they're more sophisticated already around brand and they have like a brand book and, you know, brand guidelines that are very stringent and stuff, and they're, they're used to having that framework and they understand where they're going to arrive at in rebranding, they're probably better prepared. But I still think that a lot of like probably your clients and organizations in general that come to you, the first iteration of their brand is this like home brewed thing. And
yes.
When you work with a professional team of people who does nothing but think about brand and execute on brand and has a whole process around like a rebrand, it's a roller coaster. There's a lot of stuff that's like put in front of you that you have to consider that you either don't want to think about or haven't thought about. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's advice or just a description of the process, but that's what I would talk about.
I think advice is giving people proper expectation, and patience is the key word. It absolutely is. You've got to be patient. There are going to be weeks you feel like you're moving slow, weeks you actually feel like you're moving fast. Can we slow down? Actually, I need more time to make this decision. So in that way, it can be very much a roller coaster. But coming back to the Sherpa, we got you. We got your back. We help create a layer of patience and comfort amongst that roller coaster ride. Fantastic. Thank you a ton for hiring us back in the day. And I look forward to chatting with you again in the future, somehow, somewhere.